Smith Sabatino, Roland Smith here. Carl Sabatino is on assignment and filling in for Carl today as our good friend and frequent guest on Smith Sabatino, Alan Marcus. Alan, I want to thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule today to have some fun here on radio.
Always a pleasure to have some fun on radio with you, Robin.
Well, indeed it is. The cocktails will be served in just a few minutes.
I'm waiting.
Yeah, okay. I realize that. You, as a courtesy to Smith Sabatino, invited our next guest, Judge Herb Stern, to join us today, and I'd like to give you the privilege of doing the introduction.
Judge Herbert Stern, Rowan, as you know from your years as a reporter, is probably one of the two or three best-known lawyers, judges, prosecutors in America. His best-selling book, Diary of a DA, captures his career from when he was in the New York District Attorney's Office starting and covers things such as the assassination of Malcolm X, and goes forward to the time he was appointed as the youngest federal district court judge in America. In the intervening period, he single-handedly cleaned up New Jersey as a corruption-fighting U.S. attorney. I can tell you, because I was in politics at the time, the one thing you did not want to get was a call from Herb Stern, because that was death. And I say with pride that Herb actually indicted or started the process by which the gentleman who brought me into politics, who acted in a corrupt fashion, went to jail.
That was Richard Nixon you're talking about.
No, I'm talking about Nelson Gross, who created Richard Nixon.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Richard Nixon.
But Herb, a little known fact for your listeners, Herb was the last judge prior to 9/11 to preside over a military tribunal. That became a movie. He wrote a book about it, another book. And he was played in that by Martin Sheen. Herb, for the listeners, is far better looking than Martin Sheen. But it's always an honor to be here with Herb. We've worked together. We've known each other for quite some time.
Okay, and I think you're done with your introduction here.
And there'll be about 2 seconds left after the introduction.
Judge Stern, thanks for being with us.
Well, thank you. And Alan, that was more generous than I deserved. Thank you.
Oh, I'm not so sure about that. Judge Stern, what are you doing these days?
Being a lawyer.
Yeah? Uh-huh. And what does that mean in terms of, you're in New Jersey?
Well, I'm in New Jersey. But
you're global, right?
Yes. We have case pending in Gibraltar, in Florida. There are no geographic limitations.
Do you like law as much today as you did the day you decided to be a lawyer?
That's a very interesting question, because the practice, my practice, has changed so much over the years that it has kept me fresh, in the sense that I was a young assistant DA in Manhattan and I was a young trial lawyer in the organized racketeering section of the United States Department of Justice out of Washington. Then I became United States Attorney for New Jersey, and then for 13 years as a federal judge. And then once in practice, I represented the Butler in the Doris Duke estate fight. We've had so many different kinds of cases that it keeps you fresh, you know, not doing the same thing all the time.
But you approach now, I would imagine, your understanding of the law with a certain degree of wisdom that probably was not necessarily part of your being when you first started out.
Well, frankly, if you ask my wife, she'll tell you I haven't grown at all.
Well, all of our wives will tell us that.
Yes, you know, behind every remotely successful man is an astonished woman. Mm-hmm. We know that. How did it happen?
Yeah. How true. Do you have a particular case that you worked on, or a story of the case that you worked on that you would like to be part of your legacy?
Well, in my spare time, I've had an occasion to write a number of books.
Several books, actually.
Yeah, I've written about eight or so. But, and in some of them, these cases come up. I think in terms of American history, one of the preeminent ones, I caught the Malcolm X case. You know, I was on homicide duty in New York when he was assassinated. That, of course, is a landmark case for the country. It was a landmark case for me as a young lawyer, and I'll never forget that. I put his wife, his widow, into the grand jury. We indicted the three men who murdered him in the presence of his young daughters and his wife in an Audubon ballroom full of people. I think one of the really great experiences with a bunch of young lawyers in the U.S. Attorney's Office, we freed Jersey City of 50 years of absolute corruption dating back to Boss Haig. We convicted Boss Kenny. We convicted the mayor of Jersey City, the president of the city council, in a system in which the corruption in those days is mind-boggling. Today you have nothing like it. I mean, we found in the 1960s a joint bank account between the mayor of Jersey City, the president of the city council, with $1,231,000 in it. Now, that's a 1960s money.
Joint bank account.
Joint. Yeah.
That's like $2 or $3 million today.
Well, I think probably, Roland, it's probably
more?
About a lot
yeah.
more.
Well, you know, this is the 50th anniversary of the assassination of Malcolm X. Is the 21st of this month, as I recall. Or February.
It's February. February. I don't believe it's the 20th. It might be the 21st.
February.
But that's a funny story. You know, I had the duty. And the rules of the police department and the DA's office was that if there was a homicide and they caught the suspect, they couldn't book him until they sent a police car for the ADA, for the assistant DA, to go take a statement. And I was young and I was single, and it was Sunday afternoon. Nothing happens on a Sunday afternoon. And I'm in a bar dancing with a young lady who I recently met, you know, and it, as a matter of fact, the place was so crowded I couldn't even fall down, even though people were jumping up and down. You could go vertically, but you couldn't go horizontally. And I hear somebody shout out, "Hey, Malcolm X just got shot." And I go, "What?" So I go crashing through the crowd, and I grab a guy at the bar. I said, "But he wasn't killed, was he?" He says, "Oh, yeah." I said, "But it wasn't Manhattan, was it?" He says, "Oh, yeah." I said, "But they didn't catch anybody, did they?" "Oh, yeah." Now, you know, today we walk around with cell phones. In those days, there was one telephone booth in the place. There was a guy in it.
Yeah.
I took him out, showed him my badge, got on the phone, and they're screaming at me, "The police commissioner's up here. Everybody's up here. We're waiting for you." And from that moment on, we had the case.
Wow. Well, you were so involved with that completely. Now, when all of that was over and you saw the movie where Martin Sheen played you,
That was a different case. That was in Berlin.
Oh, I thought that was Malcolm X.
No.
Denzel, I misunderstood. Sorry.
Denzel Washington played Malcolm X. And I must tell you that that movie was extremely accurate. For those of your listeners that have any interest in what the assassination looked like, it was done to
really?
A punctilio.
Ooh.
Because we reestablished the ballroom. I mean, what we did was, we really rebuilt it in the sense of finding out everybody who was there, where they sat, and so forth and so on. It was perfectly done. Spike, he really did. He did a first-class job. The movie you're talking about. I was appointed a United States judge for Berlin.
Right.
Try a hijacking, and Martin liked the book, and he decided to play me. And that's really a guess.
Did he, as an actor, did he talk to you to figure out what kind of mannerisms he needed to do because of you?
No, I think he was more happy with his own.
Well, very well could be.
Herb, let me ask you about another case that a number of our listeners may remember and very few people ever talk about, but I think it's an astonishing moment in history, and that's the Camden 28.
Oh, well, that's quite a story.
Well, give us a précis on that.
This is during the Vietnam War.
Yes.
When a group in Camden, mostly priests, decided that they were going to sabotage the draft papers so that young men would not have to go to war. And the Justice Department under John Mitchell in those days thought that these people should be prosecuted to the limit.
I remember now. Okay.
Well, they've made a movie of that. They've made several movies, but there are documentaries about this case. It was... I'm in bed Sunday morning. The phone rings about 6:30, and Robert Mardian, who was assistant AG in charge of the Internal Security Division, on the phone. "We just arrested 28 people in Camden, most of them priests." I said, "You have?" He says, "Yeah." I said, "What'd they do?" He says, well, they broke into a Selective Service office and started destroying draft records. He says, you know, we've been watching them for a couple of months. I said, you have? He says, yeah, and we had two of your assistants working for us, but we told them not to tell you. I said, you did? He says, yes, and we don't want you to be mad at them. I said, well, of course not.
Yeah, right.
And I said, well, why are you bothering me now at 6:30 in the morning on Sunday morning? He said, well, we want your office to handle a case. So I said, well, you're doing such a good job. Why don't you just do it yourself?
I got it. Listen, Judge Stern, I'm going to have to ask you to pause in this story. And like the old serial days in radio, we'll be right back. We'll tell you more.
America Weekend.
Where are they now with Ahmad Rashad?
This 1985 NHL Rookie of the Year played an amazing 26 seasons, racking up nearly 1,500 games. He's a three-time winner of the Norris Trophy, and he's proudly hoisted the Stanley Cup three times.
A rink-wide pass. Here's Chelios out of the penalty box. He scores!
So where is Chris Chelios now? Chris finally hung up his skates in August of 2010, but the very same day he retired, the Detroit Red Wings announced they had hired Chris to work in the front office as the advisor to hockey operations. Chris helps to develop the Red Wings' defensive prospects from the minors.
Now Chelios, a shot blocked by that. Back to Chelios. He shoots! He scores! Chris Chelios!
Not bad for a guy who played until he was 47. I'm Ahmad Rashad.
Tired of high cable bills? Call 888-759-MYTV. With packages as low as $19.99 for four rooms, you can't go wrong. Call now, 888-759-MYTV.
Welcome to American Biker Minute. Lately, we're hearing a new, more lame excuse for why the price of pump gas is fast to rise and slow to fall. As if today on American Biker Minute.
Do you have troubled skin or acne? With Proactive Plus, your acne can heal and you can help prevent new breakouts from happening. Call Proactive Plus now and receive a 60-day risk-free trial along with two free extras and free shipping. Call 800-393-6139. That's 1-800-393-6139.
Jeff Ryan for American Biker Minute. Local and state taxes combined with how far your station is from the refinery has a lot to do with how expensive the gas is that you buy. Why, regardless of location, is the dollar amount paid for gasoline much faster to rise than fall? You ready for a good laugh? They say because Americans buy less gas as the price falls. Don't know about you, but we're burning all the $2 a gallon gas we can get our filthy hands on, regardless of how fast or slow the price is falling. Oh, and keep it coming. American Biker Minute, your passport to the open road on two wheels.